Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcast. Today, we dive into the chaotic world of live performances, unexpected health scares, and the relentless pursuit of passion in comedy. Let's begin.
He told me to quit taking the antibiotics I was already on, and he did nothing except for call the CDC to tell them I had COVID, and they both said, you cannot do the show. I'm like, wait a minute, you're the wrong doctor. I don't want the fucking retire today shit. I want to, your drummer's a junkie, he's out of heroin, get him some fucking something to get him through this goddamn
show.
So
they were telling you you can't do the show because you had a specific kind of a cold, a COVID cold. So if you had the flu, would he have stopped you from doing the show?
I'd say absolutely not.
That's so weird.
I don't think it would even come up.
That's so weird because right now, like, the deaths from COVID now are so low. Like, the idea that this is still a pandemic and they still have to treat it differently than they do a cold.
They do. And
why?
I was faced with, do I cancel a show? Well, that's not the same as St. Louis when they just move the date and the people from St. Louis come back out. This is Las Vegas.
Right.
A lot of those people come specifically to see me because I don't do all those shows that I used to do. So it's kind of, if you want to come see it, that's a good place. And so it's a problem. You know, it's a refund. You got to refund them all because those people aren't going to be there.
Most importantly, your fans are bummed out.
Yeah. I've disappointed them. Everybody's here. Fuck, let's do the show. So I just sitting there. I didn't know what to do. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to call MGM Grand and tell them what the fuck's going on. Let it be their call, you know. And they were like, so how do you feel? I'm like, I feel like I can make it through the show. And they're like, well, I say let's just go ahead and do it. It's a big room. You're not within 6 feet of anybody.
It's
2025.
You did tell me you had COVID and I gave you a big hug on Monday. I saw you on Monday.
Yeah.
When we did Kill Tony.
Right, and I was
fine. You were a super spreader on Kill Tony. You son
of
a bitch.
Big time. I'm an asshole. The biggest asshole ever. It would be so
horrible.
Nobody
got sick.
I know, nobody
got sick.
It wasn't until the next day that I got sick. That's when the vomiting started. It wasn't in Vegas. It was day two. It was Tuesday after Kill Tony. That's when I got sick. And it was fucking awful. I mean, for 2 days, just awful.
Did you get another steroid shot?
No, nobody would give me one. So I don't know, man. I just got the wrong goddamn.
You got to go to Gold's Gym.
Yeah, right.
Find the biggest guy in the room and say, who's
dude,
your doctor?
Dude, you got something, don't you?
You know you got something, bro. Come on, man. Aren't you a Ron White fan? Give me some fucking steroids.
Just to get me around the corner. So
yeah.
So I'm back. I feel fine today. And,
well, that's good.
And
good,
which
to see
is
you back.
Really good news.
You coming to the club tonight?
They asked me to. I don't know who's got the set tonight. I don't know who's got the show.
We do. Fuck it. Let's go.
Okay, let's go. I'll go.
Let's go, Ron White. Plus, bottom of the barrels tonight, too.
The Kill Tony was on Netflix
last
night.
Isn't that amazing? I'm so happy. I'm so happy for Tony and Red Band and for everybody on the show. I'm just so happy that show is now on Netflix.
It's sweet, you know. I always believed in it, and you know that. And I always saw something in Tony. I was never sure what exactly it was, but I saw something, you know, that this kid works hard. You know, he's got a dream that he's fucking making it work, and he's making it work with hard work.
He works hard. He works really hard at that show, man.
Really does.
I mean, I call him in the middle of the day sometimes, and he's just laying out, like, how he's going to do the show, what he's got. He's, like, he's planning it. He's wandering around his apartment writing notes down, just planning it out in his head. He's legit.
Tony's legit.
This is the thing about success. It's a product of hard work. And in that example, I fucking know it's a product of hard work. Those guys did that show every goddamn Monday for 10 plus years.
Starting with 6 people in the crowd.
I was one of them. I was there when they were doing the belly room show. But I always encouraged it. I encourage people to do shows when no one's watching. Because I think that, you know, the only way something builds is you got to get it started. You can't think you're going to launch a podcast and it's going to have a million downloads. It's not that way. And you don't want it that way anyway. You want to get good at it. You want to learn how to do it. You want to iron out the kinks.
I agree.
And they did it. They fucking did it. They did it. Now it's one of the best shows in the world. It's the funniest fucking show on television, for sure.
You know, as far as just a fucking entertaining thing to goddamn do, I mean, just to come down, you know, my last girlfriend was so addicted to the show. She would come almost every Monday. And it's hard for me to go down there on Kill Tony night because they got the, you know, the green rooms hocked out to 19,000 people. And right. There's no place for me to go. And,
right.
And so, you know, but she was addicted to it. I mean, just as something fun to do, you know.
It's a fun thing to do,
because
man.
You're going to get some great comics. And it doesn't matter if the comic eats it on stage, because it's still funny. You know, that's not the point. The point is that everybody has access, you know, in some way. And there's no shortcut to get there, because I tried to shortcut it because I thought I could because I was Ron White. And my banker said, yeah, I've been doing stand-up, and I'd love to get out. I'm like, no problem. I'll tell him. I'll fix this for you. And he was like, yeah, no, you can't. It's a bucket pull. That's the only way he can do it, is to get his name in there.
It's a legit bucket pull.
It is.
It really is. And sometimes one of our guys gets in, like Asan's been on a couple of times now, you know, and sometimes not. You put your name in the bucket. You'll see. There's hundreds of names in that bucket. It's a great idea. It's a great idea. It really is.
And it's inclusive to anybody. I mean, it's amazing to me who... He had the vision to put anybody, no matter what kind of physical shape, you can't even say a word,
right?
And handicapped on top of that,
all you have to do is just give it a go. Give it a go. Try to be funny. Yeah. Do your best. Just do your best.
Yeah.
So and there's a lot of people doing their best.
I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled for the success of it.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it really is.
It's fun too. It's like it makes everything more fun. When there's a fun thing like that out there in the world, more of us have fun. We have more fun at the clubs. We have more fun talking about comedy.
Yeah, and it made me really proud too. Just to walk out on stage and it's. You know, it's you and Shane and Segura and Tony. And these are my friends. You know, these are my buddies. This is my tribe right here. Yeah. And we're doing something really special. And it's a fucking hoot. You know,
it is a fucking hoot.
It's a fucking hoot.
Yeah. And it's that club's the best place for it.
I had a nightmare the other night.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And it was about the club.
Oh, no.
And that I was the headliner that night. And I got down there, and there were like 9 11-year-old girls, and that's all the tickets we could sell. And I was like, did you tell them I was coming? I mean, yeah, we put it in the thing, and nobody showed up, nightmare. Ron, except for these chicks. And...
If I was your psychiatrist, I'd sit down and go, Ron, what do you think this means to you? What inside of your subconscious makes you think that only... 11-year-old girls would come to see you do comedies.
That's because for 38 years I've been waiting for the end, you know, and it finally happened that night in the middle of that dream. I knew it would happen.
I think like that, and it drives me crazy. I don't understand how you can think like that.
I just always have because it never works as good as it works for me. You know, I mean, it's worked okay for you, but I mean, you know, these kind of careers don't last forever. Unless they do, and there's not very many of them that do, you know, last fucking 4 decades. And...
It's a different world now, Ron. I think they do last now.
I guess so.
I think the thing that was going on before was everybody thought you did comedy to get to something.
As we shift gears, let's explore the deeper emotional landscapes that often accompany our experiences in comedy and life, revealing how they intertwine in unexpected ways.
I didn't even know like how long it would take before I felt like I could do comedy again. So I'm at the gas station getting gas, and just randomly run into a buddy of mine who's a cop, and I go, "Hey, what's up? What's going on, man?" He's like, "How you doing? You doing okay?" I'm like, "Man, we're all fucked up, you know." And he goes, "Did I tell you that I was there?" I go, "No, you were there." He goes, "Dude,
what?"
He goes, "I was there when the kids ran from the mom." I go, "What do you mean?" He's like, after she killed herself, she barricaded herself in the after she killed Phil Hartman, she barricaded herself in the bathroom, and she had the kids in there with her with a gun. And a lot of times when moms kill themselves, they'll kill their kids too. And the cops saw that, and so they kicked open the door. And when they kicked open the door, the kids ran from the mom. The kids ran out of the bathroom, and then the mom blew her brains out.
Fuck, I forgot about that part of it. I mean, I forgot that she killed herself.
And then I'm seeing my friend at the gas station right before I go on stage. I'm going on stage in about 45 minutes.
Jesus.
Yeah. Half-hour drive to the Comedy Store. 15 minutes before I'm going to go on stage. And this is my face. I'm just like, there's nothing funny in the world. There's nothing funny in the world. And then after I recovered, you know, I took like another week off. And then I came back and I was like, he just wanted me to keep going. I had a dream about him once. It was like the most realistic dream I've ever had about anybody in my life. Ever in my life. He was sitting in a lawn chair. And I ran into him and I was like, how are you doing? What are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm fine. He goes, we made up. He goes, it was a lot. He goes, obviously we had a lot to work out, and he laughed about it. And, I said, well, that's great, man. And then he pushed the chair back and he was gone. And then I woke up. Like, he was gone. It was I've had two very realistic dreams in my life that seemed so realistic, they didn't even make sense. And that was one of them, where it was like, I felt like he was there. I feel like he wanted me to let it go. It was so weird. I felt like, you know, he wanted, it's like, that's how he was whenever they would fight. Because, like, I don't like fights in real, which sounds crazy because I commentate on fights, but I don't like conflict. I wish it didn't exist. The reason why I got good at fighting, like martial arts, is because I was scared of conflict. I don't like it. I understand it, but I don't think it's necessary. And I don't think fighting in a relationship, I think that's the worst. And the people that get in these relationships, they scream and yell at each other and call each other horrible names. But with a lot of people, it becomes this cycle of getting mad at each other and then making up. And then the making up sex is like very addictive to a lot of people. It's like it's a different kind of thing. And you get on this weird roller coaster ride of I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I love you. And he was on that roller coaster ride. And he was letting me know. Like, it just went too far. It went crazy.
Well, you know, I lived in Mexico for a while with a woman who eventually took her own life.
Oof.
And I mean, I was already out of the picture for a couple of years, and when that happened. But when I was in Mexico with her, I knew that I was trapped. Number one, I moved down there to start a fucking pottery company because I was frustrated with stand up comedy. They had just cut the Funny Bone chain had just cut my pay by a third. Because they realized that I just worked for them.
Oh boy!
And I couldn't patch this schedule together without them.
Oh, what a bunch of assholes!
So they and I told the guy that ran the Funny Bone, Gerald Kubach, to go eat a steaming bowl of fuck. And,
I don't even know what that would look like.
I don't know, but it cost me a lot of work to say it, but it was still fun to say. And
wow!
But I moved with her down to Mexico, and I knew that she was crazy, and I. And the way it came up was she had called a friend of mine and told her that sometimes she stands over my bed with a knife and just stares at me. And my son was there also part of the time. And I'm like, well, that's over. I got to get out of this. But the big thing was I was depressed because of my situation, because I didn't see a way out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't see a way out. I just couldn't see a path. And it got to where when I was around people, I couldn't talk. I had no tribe, you know, at all. I was cut off from all my friends. And it's just something I did to myself with that move down to Mexico, which I was there for 3 years.
Wow.
And it was just the worst time of my life. And I really didn't think I'd ever come out of it. I mean, I never thought I could even get back to a place where I could sit down and have a conversation with somebody. That's how depressed I was.
Wow.
And when it was funny because I moved into Mexico. I had the biggest truck that Ryder makes, pulling the biggest trailer they make. My van pulling the biggest trailer they make, all headed down south.
All your shit.
To everything, moved to Mexico.
Why Mexico?
Because my girlfriend at the time did this mosaic tile application to existing pottery. And she would sell it at art shows or craft shows, you know, whatever. And it would sell really fast, but it took her 6 months to make any of it. So I thought, why wouldn't you just go down to Mexico and train a bunch of women how to make it? And let her orchestrate
NAFTA.
It. And I fucking did it. I was part
goodness.
Of that sucking sound that Ross Perot was talking about going to Mexico. 3 years later, I had the exact same equipment headed on north out of Mexico with same exact truck, trailer, everything. Oh, that was a bad idea.
3 years.
And
wow.
But
she must
once
have been hot.
She was so hot. Oh, she was so hot. And I'd never been with a hot woman before. That was my girl, you know. And,
yeah.
And she was so beautiful. I'm like, I'll be with her even though I hate her, just so I can look at her. You know, I'll just stare at her, and that'll be enough. That's all I'll need. Turns out I needed a little more than that. So,
yeah.
But
you can only tolerate so much.
And then and I ended up marrying this other girl that was horrible. I mean, I know she's probably listening to this right now, so I don't mean horrible, but horrible. And but she always searched the internet for things about me so she could say, hey, this person said thanks for signing my girlfriend's tickets. What, are you out there signing girlfriend's tickets? I'll sign anybody's ticket, you know, just always looking. Every time she'd turn on her computer, it'd make me sick to my stomach because I didn't know what she was going to come up with. You know, I'm no angel anyway. And but so that girl's sister, when she killed herself, sent me a post that my ex-wife found. She printed it saying that she had killed herself. She brought it in and handed it to me. And all I did was sit down on the couch, and she goes, oh, now you loved her. I'm like, just give me a minute, okay?
Is her sister doing this to
No, me? This is my wife.
Oh,
she got wife. The note from
oh.
her. She got the
oh.
letter from her sister
oh,
and
God.
Handed it to me, and she saw it affected me. And
oh,
she's like,
Jesus.
Oh, now you loved her.
Jesus Christ. Well, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah.
A lady that you used to live with killed herself.
As we reflect on those intense moments of our past, it's fascinating to consider how they shape our present choices and the paths we take moving forward.
And I'm like, what kind of a moron who takes so good care of his body is poisoning himself a couple of days a week for fun? You know, why am I doing that? And then I'm like, well, will I have the same amount of fun if I don't poison myself? Turns out, yes.
Exactly. Right. Well, there's more than one way to skin a cat. I mean, you haven't quit everything, right?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, and I'm just skinning the cat a different way.
Tell me about your cat. Well, I'm going to play some Icaros. Did they play those while you went through the... Here we go. Jamie's got them already.
So what's that?
This is the songs that a lot of the shaman like to play while you're tripping balls.
Oh, okay.
And if they play this song while you're under the influence... The hallucination will dance to the songs.
Oh, wow.
There's certain songs you're like, I don't get it. Like the Grateful Dead. I've never been on acid at a Dead concert. But they say, if you are, you get it. So, like, I'm missing that part.
Right.
You know? So, to me, it's like it's just this jam music, which is fine. But I'd rather listen to Skynyrd. You know what
right.
I mean?
I saw Skynyrd Sunday night.
The original Skynyrd, the real Skynyrd before the plane crash.
No, I'm just saying. These guys are putting
a
show together.
I'm sure.
Ricky Medlock playing Alan Collins' play. They have two other guitar players, but it is a band.
Mm.
I mean, they are nailing this shit. I had tears coming out of my eyes during fucking Freebird for a lot of reasons. Number one, I saw them in 73. Me and Steve Cook, who was my best friend till the day he died.
Wow.
And Ronnie Van Zant was lighting joints. and he was handing them out into the crowd. Well, me and Steve had worked our way up to the front. He handed one of them to me, and everybody else was taking a hit. I just stuck it in my pocket and went in the bathroom and smoked it because it was illegal then. And I was listening to Skinner. Well, Sunday night, I'm at the Skinner show. There's cops where I was, and there was outhouses right next to it where you go through this fence. And I told my girlfriend, I'll be right back. And I was over there. I was in the outhouse smoking a joint, listening to Skinner, and I'm like, well, I haven't changed much in 50 fucking years, you know, the exact same thing. So,
Some songs, people just nail it, and it stays great forever.
Yeah.
You never get tired of Freebird.
But
that
there's
guitar solo.
Yeah. And they just fucking hammered it home. I mean, it was so good.
Oh, nice.
That it was just, I couldn't believe it, you know. I brought him on stage at the Greek one time, maybe 20 years ago or 15 years ago, I don't know. And it was fun because I got to say that when I was 16 years old, we were at the Skinner show and we had taken enough mushrooms to kill an average teenager, but we weren't average teenagers. And ladies and gentlemen, Leonard Skinner, it was great fun.
That's cool.
And so it kind of brought back all those memories, you know, and then watching them play it again. It was kind of, it's weird because, especially when I come back from Rhythmia, which is my place out there, that I always come back emotional.
Right.
And kind of full of love and forgiveness and those kinds of things. That's kind of what I learned from those hallucinogens.
Yeah. And, isn't it crazy that that's illegal?
Yeah, to feel good.
You got to go to another country to be a better person.
Yeah.
You got to go to another country. You got to leave the land of the free.
Right.
Leave the land of freedom to go to another country that's much more lawless and take in the divine and come back a better person.
It's crazy. And I always said, and I don't think it's for everybody. You know, I'm not somebody out there just going, yeah, you got to do this, because I think you have to be open to some things.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be open to, hey, maybe I'm wrong about everything. You know, maybe there is.
If you're not open to it, you'll get hit hard.
Well, and that's why it's not for everybody, because, I've seen people wig down there,
mm-hmm.
and which is why I know you can get ayahuasca locally and they have people that are, I don't know where they got their shaman title from, but you can do
the
it
internet.
Here, yeah. But I know that there, you know, it's a licensed medical facility with doctors. It's the only one in the world that's a licensed medical facility, and they're prepared when people wig. You know, they know what to do.
They know to hold you down.
Yeah, and they do too. They'll fucking bind you up and wait till it to clear, because they know that you're at a point in this that you're going through some heavy shit. One of them was an NFL player last time I was there.
Oh,
and this
no.
guy was fucking huge, plays
oh,
for
no.
Buffalo. And I was like, God, if you had to pick somebody to wig, you would say, please don't let it be that fucking dude.
Did he wig?
He wigged.
Oh, no.
He wigged big time.
Oh, no.
And started just screaming, get the fuck away from me.
Oh, no.
And, which, you know, that kind of... You know, you got 70 people in this room that are tripping, and so.
Oh no! What a bummer!
And it was, but they got big guys too.
Oh, there you go.
And so they just got him out of the room, got him calmed down, and he didn't leave. You know, he was going through some shit.
Mm.
The first time I went there, this girl from Japan started kicking and screaming, and they took her outside and they had to fucking subdue her. But at the end of the day, the person with the biggest smile on their face was her, because she worked through some shit that I can't even talk about, that I happen to know what it was, but it ain't worth knowing. But she found pure fucking joy and peace in her life, and you could see it in her face, you know. And I was wondering why, when she was wigging out, why is nobody flipping out but me? Because the people that worked there weren't flipping out at all, because they've seen it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing they haven't seen. There's been 18,000 people through that facility, and so they've seen it all.
Right.
And but they just know how to handle it. Well, I wonder if you're just in some mansion in Beverly Hills or whatever, if there's somebody there that knows how to handle it.
Probably not. Kind
of, probably not.
Probably not. Especially if you don't know what you're going to get hit with.
Yeah. And you need to be in a really safe place where people know how to guide you through it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, it's not something I think you want to grab a handful of and go sit in a fucking closet, you know, and try to figure it out for yourself. So
that's the real weirdness of any kind of a psychedelic journey, is that you're probably going to be going through some shit, and someone could either manipulate you during that time or help you during that time.
Right.
And there are people that will manipulate you.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, that's why I go to this place that's not that
legit.
Easy to go to, but yeah. Just because it's so safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it's set up perfectly for what they're trying to do. And it was this guy's dream to do that. To make it accessible to regular people. So back then, when he opened up, you had to go to a corrugated tin shack in Peru or wherever to get this stuff. And he said, I want to make a place that's safe to go and people feel comfortable. And, you know, so.
Isn't it kind of crazy that that's illegal? I mean, it's kind of the weirdest thing of all time that we haven't just as a society went, okay, why are all these people going to these places? Okay, when they come back, do they have positive experiences? Does it help them? Yeah, a lot of them. Okay, why don't we do that here? It should be that simple.
Should be that simple.
It should be so simple.
Yeah, there was a guy there that was on a scholarship they had for basically wounded warriors that are going through heavy PTSD. There's an organization that's sending guys to Rhythmia. So I got to talk to him a lot while he was there, and he was a psychologist, and he was fucked up.
As we reflect on those transformative experiences and the lessons learned, let's shift gears and talk about how the world has changed since then, especially in the wake of the pandemic and what it means for our creative journeys.
Well, we almost did it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when we all went through that with COVID, I mean, you were basically saying you were done.
I thought it was done.
Yeah,
I didn't like it anymore. I was halfway through every set. I was couldn't wait for it to be over.
Wow.
And now I go on stage and I have this whole new gratitude for these crowds, you know, that are still there waiting, bigger than ever. My shows sell out faster than they ever have.
Isn't that amazing?
And part of it is just because there's less of them, I guess, but also it's because of my friends. You know, the word gets out. You know, you guys didn't let me die.
Yeah. Yeah, we knew. I mean, I tell everybody, but it's true. Like, you're one of the reasons why we decided to buy a club. Because you grabbed me when you got off stage that first time. You hadn't been on stage in like 8 months. And you grabbed me by the shoulders. Like, whatever the fuck we have to do, we're going to keep doing this.
Yeah. And we did.
I'll never forget that moment. I was like, okay, we're going to do it. You're going to get that fucking club open. I'm like, we're going to do it. I was already thinking about doing it very seriously because I realized, like, early on coming here, I was like, we need a place. We can't just be working out of these rock and roll clubs. They're not set up right.
No.
You know?
No, there's a difference. I don't even like to do sets other places.
I don't either.
That's really what's wrong with the mothership.
I know.
It'll spoil your fucking ass, you know, with great crowds and perfect acoustics and an amazing sound system and then when you move over to another room, which I rarely do, do another set in town. I did one a couple months ago, and I was like, this sucks. If you guys want to find me, I'll be down at the mothership.
We actually did it. You know, it's interesting when you look back at those conversations we used to have, like we were in the Vulcan, hanging out in the green room, talking about what the club's going to be like.
Yeah.
But it seemed like a pipe dream. And I know a lot of people probably did think it was fake. There's a lot of people in L.A., like Tony used to talk to them all the time. Yeah, when's Joe opening that club? Club's never going to open. It's all bullshit. You guys moved down there for no fucking reason. Because the thing about you making a choice, that's a scar.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. If the thing about you making a choice to go and, you know, start something up and the people that are left behind, they kind of want you to fail, especially the haters.
Right.
They want you to. So Tony was like encountering that all the time. These people that just, for whatever reason, they don't want other people to, they don't want other people to escape the bomb that they're in, you know? It's like people from the neighborhood that don't want you to leave. And when you do leave, oh, look who's back.
Right.
People, for whatever reason, people really like when people fail. You know, it's a gross feeling. It's a gross thing, but it's super, super common. Looking for a joint?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Ron, why don't you know we're in Texas? You know, that's the first thing they got to fix, is make this shit legal in the whole country. It's so crazy that
what's stopping them?
Oh, I don't know. I don't understand it. I mean, it's a political beach ball. It's one of those things that just gets tossed around that I think is good for the establishment that runs the country. It's good to keep it up in the air. Like, I'll promise when I get in office, gays will be able to marry. Yay!
Yeah, right.
And then they're talking about, so there's people that want to take that off the table, you know? It's like there's a bunch of those things, like Roe v. Wade, that was a big one. There's a bunch of these cultural beach balls that are very important issues to some people. And they get exploited by politicians as a way to promise you this and promise you that, but sure. But it never, nothing ever gets fixed. Nothing ever changes.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's changing a little. You know, I didn't think marijuana would ever be legal in Oklahoma. I thought they'd be behind us, you know. But boy, you go there now, it's billboards on every fucking street corner. Come get your weed, you know.
New Mexico just authorized psilocybin therapy.
Really?
Yep. For people with depression, I think depression and anxiety, is that what it's for? Is that what they're using it? Those terms which apply to basically everybody?
Right, everybody, everybody.
Everybody's had some depression and some anxiety. There you go. Now you can get some mushrooms and figure your life out.
Well, maybe I'll give it a try.
Yeah. It's just the problem is federally, it's still not legal, and that which is,
right.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb. You know, and I don't think it's going to change. Unfortunately, I think Trump is too busy with all these other issues. I don't think he's interested in that. So, co-sponsor said, here it goes. The bill would establish an advisory board, treatment equity fund, and research fund, as well as remove psilocybin from the Controlled Substances Act to protect qualified and registered patients, clinicians, and producers, according to a news release released jointly by the office of the Senate and the House Democrats. So this is what the Democrats have over the Republicans. Freedom to explore your consciousness. Republicans, for whatever reason, they shy away from that. It doesn't fit with their conservative mindset of what you should. It used to be it didn't fit. The freedom of speech didn't fit with their mindset, and now the Republicans are all about freedom of speech because they realize the consequences of it during the last election cycle. You know, when things get censored and when you have a town square that's curated by not just the big tech companies but also by the federal government itself, things can get weird when you're trying to access the truth. You want to know what is actually going on. When certain stories have actually been suppressed for the news because the federal government deems them misinformation, even if they turn out to be true, that's not good. And so because of that, the right is supporting freedom of speech, which I think is fucking great. That's great. That's what we all should be supporting. But we also should be supporting the freedom to expand your consciousness. And people have been doing it in certain ways for thousands and thousands of years.
Thousands and thousands of years.
And you don't know better if you haven't done it. If you haven't done it yourself and you're passing judgment on people that have, you're not qualified. If you want to go, you know, do a psilocybin session, like a heavy, what Terrence McKenna would call a heroic dose, you want to do that and then talk shit? Okay.
Yeah.
But until then, because the thing is, like, it would preclude you from doing the things that you're doing. Know this, okay? If you are a fucking rampant capitalist and all you give a fuck about is your hedge fund and all you give a fuck about is the stock market and numbers and buying this exclusive that and that exclusive this and getting tickets to this exclusive thing and all you're about is like status and numbers, it will fuck that up. It will fuck that whole thing sideways. You won't be able to take any of that seriously anymore. But that's good. It's good for you. You're not supposed to be taking that seriously. If you've got $500 million and you're still scrambling to try to make more money, like, pause. You're 67 years old. You're going to die if you're lucky in 30 years. If you're so lucky to hit 97.
Oh, yeah.
30 years happens so quick, man. Oh, we've been here for five, Ron.
I know.
We've been here for, you were here for six.
Yeah.
You were here. You were patient zero. I always say you're patient zero in the Austin invasion. Because I remember calling you, it was 2018 when you moved here?
17, I think.
17. I remember calling you going, what are you doing down there? Like, we miss you at the store. Oh, I fucking love it down here, middle of the country. If I want to fly, I can fly anywhere real quick. People are nice. Food's great. And I was like, fuck, can I live in Texas?
As we reflect on the journey of building something from the ground up, let's shift our focus to the vibrant personalities that have emerged in this new era of comedy.
He's like a different thing. Even the way he dresses, it's like he's from the 50s.
Right.
And he's like my age. Like he's not. He was like that when I met him. He was from a different era when I met him in 94. I was like,
oh, you've known him that long?
Yeah. I'm like, where is this fucking guy from? Like, you're from a different time.
People fucking love him, though, man.
He's got a crowd now.
Yeah, he does.
That's the difference between the way he was treated at the store. Unfortunately, he fell into this through nobody's fault. But it was like everybody waited till the end and Holtzman would go up. But, like, why have him on the end? You know, it's like, have him on when the crowd's hot.
Right.
Like, don't put him on at 1 in the morning. Put him on at 10. You know, let's see when the crowd is, like, popping. Like, let him cook. When the crowd's popping, you know, and now he sells out. People come to see him.
Right.
In the headlines. It's like people get excited. You know, he's a maniac. And he's got a crowd now. He's got like a legitimate draw.
They get it.
Yeah, they get it.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's fun. And, you know, that's also the difference between when a comedy club is run by a comic. You know, because Holtzman has always been a comic for comics. You know, we all would go to see Holtzman at the end of the night when he was doing these insane sets for 15 people in the main room.
Right.
But now, like, we're running the shows. Like, give him a fucking weekend. Like, let's go. Give him a Thursday night. Let's go. Let's have some fun.
Right.
Especially
he does a lot
10 p.m. shows.
Right. He does a lot of Thursdays.
Yeah, especially 10 p.m. shows. That's right. The best time to see him. When it's late and you've had a couple of cocktails.
Right.
You feel a little crazy about the world.
Yeah.
Let that guy loose.
You understand it's a joke?
Yeah, you get jokes. You get someone saying something that he doesn't really mean.
Right.
It's completely ridiculous to say. Yeah, that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he acts like he means it, and you buy into it. No, it's a joke still. Yeah.
But every now and then, he'll show you behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Every now and then, he'll give you a little peek, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is an act. He's having fun.
He is. He's having a good time. And he loves Austin, too. I see him walking around downtown almost every time I drive through the city. He's just.
Yeah, it was a big getting him here. It was a big get because we wanted to bring a lot of the. There was some magic that was trapped in the talent of the Comedy Store. It was magic. And some of it wasn't being utilized correctly. And Holtzman's the best example of that.
But what a fun hang it was, you know?
What a fun hang.
Yeah, it was great.
That's some of my favorite times in my life in that back bar.
Yeah.
Just laughing. We would be back there just laughing. That was a great thing the Comedy Store did when they put together that bar. And that it had Mitzi's actual bar from her house was the bar there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that bar didn't used to be there. Like, so the early days, that was like a storage room. And so at one point in time when the store was, like, really killing it, they decided, like, we should turn this into a bar. And I don't know what year was that. I feel like that was, like, 2014-ish, like, which is right when I came back. And the store was killing it. And we all we're like, oh yeah, we'll have our own bar. This is incredible. And you had to go through the kitchen to get to it, like a scene from Goodfellas.
Right.
And you get back there, and you could only be back there if you were cool. Like you couldn't buy a ticket.
It was policed, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to have a friend. You had to know somebody to get back there. But we would be hanging with some of the coolest people in the world.
That was my favorite place to drink.
And it was so fun. There'd be musicians back there.
Smoke pot back there.
And everybody was just chill. And the drinks were free.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy. It was like, it was so fun. The store was a magical place, man. A magical place. And there's something about the fact that, you know, it had this insane history to it that you felt like, wow, I can't believe I'm even here.
Right. Standing on the stage, same stage as Pryor and
Kinison. You know, Kinison, yeah. Right. And you're in the belly of the beast on Sunset in Hollywood, like right in the middle of everything.
Right.
In the middle of everything. Where everybody, I remember when I was a kid in 1988, when I first started doing stand-up, they would talk about the Comedy Store like it was Mecca.
Right.
Like you had to make your pilgrimage to the store. And some guys would say they went there, but they bombed. Oh, I went back to try to do some meetings. I did a set at the store. I bombed. I fucked that place. Like.
Yeah, my first trip out to L.A., I was trying to get on at the Improv. I couldn't get on, and I was like, oh, man, I went to the Comedy Store. And I told them my story. It was Monday night, and they put me up first, which wasn't a really good spot, and I ate it. And but they did put me on stage. Yeah, there it is, right there. There were about 10 people in there or whatever, nobody, and it was a horrible experience, but I always look back at it finally, you know, because they did it.
Yeah,
they said, yeah, go get on stage.
And first time I ever came out to the store, I was out in LA to do some pilot thing for MTV, and I was staying at a hotel, and I knew where the store was. I was like, I gotta get there. I just gotta see what it's like. And they let me in because I said, hey, I'm a comedian from New York. Can I just come in and watch the show? And they're like, yeah, sure. They just let me right in. And then I sat in the back of the room, and there was like 19 people in there, and they were all like, the comics that were on stage were terrible. They were all like Bodaks. They're like people that, and then I realized years later that what had happened was a lot of these scenes, they go in these peaks and valleys, and I had caught it when it was at a valley. Mm-hmm. And before it was at a peak, like the Kinison years, it was at a giant peak. When people would come to, it was the wild place. Kinison was there. They all come at midnight and watch him, and celebrities would be all there. And he had died in like 92, I think. And I got there in 94. So there was this absence.
Lull, right.
It was a real lull. There was a lot of like leftovers. People that were in the 80s that didn't make it.
Right.
But they were still around. They're still doing stand-up and hoping that something was going to happen. But they had tired acts. They were just tired. Right. It hadn't happened for them. They're out there doing pilot season. They didn't want to be at the store because if you're at the store, there's no agents. There's no executive. No one comes to see you at the store at that time. They would go to the Improv.
Right,
they'd
right.
go to the Laugh Factory. That's where the industry was. So if you really wanted to have an actual career, you wouldn't be doing sets at the store.
And you had to do sets in front of Bud Friedman going, language! Watch your language! Fuck. Yeah.
There was a lot of that back then, right? The TV days. Everybody thought you had to be clean.
You know, when I came back to the store, it was in its heyday. You know, you were, running the podcast and, you know, the fucking place was packed to the rafters and the comics were solid as fuck, you know.
We had a magical run.
Yeah.
It was a magical run.
And we're having one now. Yeah. So it's
the same thing. I mean, it's basically, but it's our version of it, the new version of it. But it's the same thing. It's just like, it's a beautiful thing when, I mean, that term artist is very pretentious. So I'll just say comics. Realize that we're all doing this thing together and there's not a lot of us. And it's fun to hang out together and enjoy each other's company and appreciate each other and appreciate the ride. We're all in this wild ride together.
That's right. And it is quite a ride.
It's a beautiful ride.
Quite a ride.
Yeah, we're very lucky, Ron White. And I say it all the time, but it's true. You're patient zero.
All right, man. I'll take the title. I'll take the title.
You're really patient zero because you just threw up. Imagine if you have some fucking new COVID, picked up some new COVID in Vegas that kills us all.
Yeah.
I love you to death, brother.
I love you too,
Thank
man.
Thank you for being here.
Hey, all right. You got. Thanks for having me on.
Goodbye.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website 3VV.podsummarizer.xuaiz. Thanks for listening.